Okay, I think we're just about ready to go.
I asked someone to come up and take the dirty dishes.
Okay. Well, we'll probably just leave them at this point. Before we get started, Tiff Prenny has been really, really helpful putting this whole presentation together and scanning in all the slides and cutting panels out and taking word balloons out and all that stuff you can only do on computers these days. So I'd like to get her to stand up and get a nice round of applause. Special volunteers. Thank you. Welcome to the first ever performance of Cerebus Live! Exclamation mark. As you can see, it says right there. And this is segment number one. Right now. Let me say right off the top that I'm not an actor. I just don't have the ability to memorize an hour's worth of material. I wish I did, but I don't. So I'm going to be reading most of this from my notes here. If this reading goes okay, I might try and do Cerebus Live! Exclamation mark again sometime. You know, like in my mid-80s or something like that. If it goes really well, maybe in my late 70s. Or if it goes over really, really big, maybe even in my early 60s. So if you don't mind, I'm going to ask you all to do me a favor. I'll tell you when I've come to the end of a segment. Like I said, this is segment number one. And I'll go like this. And that'll be your cue to, you know, applaud and laugh and stomp your feet and go wild. Do that whistling thing with your fingers and setting off your air horns if you remember to bring them. And, you know, stuff like that. And depending on your reaction, that'll tell me the next time that I'm going to be doing this. My mid-80s, my mid-70s, or my early 60s. Okay. That's the end of segment number one. Jeez, you're easy. Okay, segment number two. How many people here hate audience participation? Can I have a show of hands? Oh wait, that's not going to work, is it? I mean, someone who really hates audience participation isn't going to put their hand up, right? Okay, we'll just flag the results on that one as one of those plus or minus 3%, 19 times out of 20, anywhere but on Earth 2 things. Not a lot of audience participation required in Cerebus Live! Exclamation mark until the very last segment. We're going to divide the room in half, straight down the middle, down here. Right side of the room, from your perspective, is over here. Left side of the room, from your perspective, over here. And I'll point to the left side of the room at the correct moment, and I want you all to go quack, quack, as loud as you can. Chester Brown suggested that I was asking a little much of a comic book reading crowd, asking them to go quack, quack really loud in public. As he said, these are people whose idea of fun is sitting in a room by themselves reading a comic book. So what do you say? Let's prove Chester wrong and show him just how carefree and outgoing, cutting-edge Toronto comic book fans can be. We'll run a quick test right now. Remember, when I point to your side of the room, quack, quack, really loud. Okay.
Quack, 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 really loud.
And again.
Quack, quack, really loud.
We'll leave off the really loud. This isn't a Marx Brothers film. Okay. And this side.
Quack,
Quack, quack, quack. Quack.
Really, you guys are a lot better on his side.
Well, there's more of you on this side. If anybody feels like moving over and fleshing out.
Can I say it really loud?
Sure, that's right. I gave them two opportunities. Good point, good point. When I point, right?
Quack, quack! Quack.
Really loudly.
They're still better, sorry.
All right.
Anyway. Okay, anyway, just give it your best shot when the time comes, and I'll give you... actually, in the audience participation part, I give you several opportunities to break out of your comic book shell. Remember, we're all just comic book people here, except for the talent scouts from Canadian Idol way in the back. Just don't even think about them. Okay, segment number three. Segment number three features one of my favorite Cerebus sequences from the late 1950s when I was about 12, and the book was still sponsored by Philip Morris Cigarettes. I should note here that I don't really do a Cerebus voice. The Cerebus voice that I hear in my head is George C. Scott's. Because George C. Scott was the only actor that I could think of like Cerebus who was just always really irritated. Every movie he was in, George C. Scott was seriously Sting. George C. Scott could make Good Morning sound like a punch in the face. George C. Scott all takes place way in the back of the throat. And doing it for longer than 15 seconds can cause you to burst a blood vessel. Unless you have the kind of calluses in your throat that you only get from smoking 3 packs of unfiltered cigarettes a day. Which is what George C. Scott used to do. Which is why he's dead now. And that really sucks. But that's as long as I can do this for, because I quit smoking my pregnant lady cigarettes with the 4-inch filters back in 99. And it really hurts to do this for any length of time. So yeah, I'm just going to be using my regular voice. Or what's left of it now. I'll do a little George C. Scott. But I'm not going all the way to the back of this room. I'm not even getting a hotel room out of the deal. Okay. So segment three features Lord Julius, Grand Lord of Calnu, who is slavishly based on Groucho Marx, whose real name was Julius Marx, Duke Leonardi, who is based on Chico Marx. Note, Chico Marx, not Chico. He got the name because he was always chasing the chicks. Little known fact by a lot of people. Ever since I was just knee-high to a contortionist, I've been in love with the Groucho Marx delivery. Pardon me, waiter, do you have frog legs? Oui, monsieur. That's the wrong answer. You're supposed to say it's rheumatism that makes me walk this way. We have to fight for this lady's honor, which is more than she ever did. That one's from Duck Soup. If we could only find a little bungalow, just you and I. Of course, I know we could find one, but maybe the people wouldn't get up. I married your mother because I wanted children. Imagine my disappointment when you were up. You know light opera, signor? Like it. The night Caruso sang Bohem at the Metropolitan, I cried like a baby. I was at the dentist having a tooth pulled out. That's from A Night at the Opera. Then there's Groucho as the hotel owner and developer in Florida in the Coconuts, addressing a crowd of potential buyers. You are now in Coconut Manor, one of the finest cities in Florida. Of course, we still need a few finishing touches, but who doesn't? This is the heart of the residential district. Every lot is a stone's throw from the stations. The only reason we haven't got a station is because we haven't got any stones. 800 beautiful residences will be built right here. They're as good as up. Better. You can have any kind of house you want. You can even get stucco. Oh, how you can get stucco. Now is the time to buy while the new boom is on. Remember, a new boom sweeps clean, and don't forget the guarantee. If these lots don't double themselves in a year, I don't know what you can do about it. So in this sequence, Cerebus has just been elected Prime Minister of the S and has conquered an adjoining territory called Lower Feldes. And the three of them are negotiating how to divide up the continent of Astarsian. So they're dividing up Astarsian in a sequence entitled A Night in the Est or Summit Enchanted Evening. I'd like to welcome all three of us to the 5th Annual Trilateral Summit in Takeoff. And I'd like to introduce our host for this evening, Prime Minister Cerebus of the City-State of the Est.
I'm the fast-talking smoothie from over the mountains and through the woods. And the walking example of why cousins shouldn't marry to my left is Duke Leonardi of New Sefer. We want a good, clean fight. No pinching, no kicking, no gouging. All sales are final. And remember, I'm not making a half crown on the deal. As the person who had to come the farthest over the worst roads, I have elected to throw out the first order of business. The second order of business concerns the division of conquered territory in order to maintain a balance of power in the Feld River Valley, to keep certain short and gray individuals from getting too big for my britches. I think you're boning your britches behind you. Luckily, I have a map of Lower Felder right here. It looks like a fat turkey. Right, that's why I'm going to carve it up. We'll divide it down here and here. I'll take the west, you take the middle, and Junior here can have everything on this side of the viaduct. Sure, that's a fight. Don't ask me why, but I'm sure he's going to say something else just then.
I want more land.
How do you like that? He can't pay the interest on what he's got, and he wants more. That's okay. I know paying my rent in 5 months, and I want more. Haven't paid your rent. Who's your landlord? You are. Well, that explains it.
Cerebus conquered Lower Felder, and no one is taking it away from him.
I'm not taking it away from you. I'm just lowering your overhead. Sometimes he lowers your overhead so far you have to crouch.
Mr. Prime Minister, the captured soldiers in Lower Felder are revolting.
I'll say.
No, I mean they're rising up in revolt. How bad is it?
Our occupation forces have been driven to the Bedouin city limits. Well, at least they didn't have to walk. That's a very true.
Have them retrench in the suburbs and send in some reinforcements from Mainz and Perrin.
Mainz and Perrin. My uncle used to work that corner. So did your mother. How would you like your loans renegotiated at the current prime rate?
What's the difference? I know can pay the interest at the older prime rate.
Why don't we go back to carving up the turkey?
The Feldens are in revolt in your territory, so Cerebus will take the west, like you said.
You take the west. No, you take the east. I get the west. All I know is I get both breasts and a thigh. I wouldn't touch a straight line like that for a weekend in Utsha. Big deal. I wouldn't trade a toothache for a weekend in Utsha.
Oh, have you got a toothache?
That depends. Depends on what? On whether you can charge me interest on it. Okay, I have another idea. How about if we carve it horizontally instead of vertically? I'll take the river section, Junior gets the middle section, and you get the top section.
That's a no good.
Why not? You get a river and a half a city, he gets a mountain pass and a half a city, and all I get is a lot of mountains. What's wrong with that? What if there's an avalanche? Well, you know what they say, avalanche is better than no lanche at all.
I don't think so. Cerebus has control of the whole country. No deal.
Mr. Prime Minister, our forces have been driven out of the suburbs. You must spend a fortune in cab fare. Have them meet the reinforcements in the mountain pass, then march back into the city.
We have to nip this rebellion in the bud.
That sounds like a good way to get rabies. I got nipped in the bud once. I was in bed for 2 weeks. I'm trying to decide the future shape of the star scene, and all he wants to do is discuss his love life. Look,
this is supposed to be a summit, and so far all we've talked about is how to divide Cerebus's territory.
Well, what do you want to talk about?
How about interest rates?
Hey, yeah, that's a good one. Okay, let's talk about interest rates.
I think they're too high.
Me too. Now that that's over with, wait just a minute. He say he think the interest rate is a too high. I say I think the interest rate is a too high. That's a majority. It certainly is. Now about this turkey. I think the interest rate should be, 17%.
15.
12.
8.
4. Sold. Four percent, eh?
That's it up.
The last time I looked, you had a personal fortune of 2 million crowns. So?
So here's a bank draft for 8,000 crowns. I want to borrow all of your money for a year. I'll have to check. I think my money is busy this year.
That's pretty clever. Borrow all his money. The fact remains that he can't afford to pay your interest rates. Cerberus has done everything he can, even conquered a country, and they owe you more money than Cerberus does. That's it. Cerberus gives up.
Can he do that?
Of course. Cerberus can't pay the interest on his loans. Foreclose. Take the country away. You're so smart, let's see you turn a profit on this mess.
I think he's a serious boss. Of all the ungrateful swine. Who offered to stretch his payments out over 25 years? I give up who? Is it my fault you picked the wrong country to invade? Did you write? Would it have killed you to send a postcard? Dear Dad, thinking of a military adventure? Know any good countries? Love, Junior? It's a terrible thing when a son and a father don't communicate. It's not me I'm worried about. It's your poor mother pining away her twilight years. It's a terrible thing when a mother spends her old age in a pine tree. It's also a terrible thing when a world leader isn't as smart as a pine tree. That's the truth.
What do you mean invaded the wrong country? I suppose you had a better choice?
The une eprinse are orme honorable bay.
Honorable bay?
Erive.
Itre?
Filthy fay.
Upitste ute?
Excuse us, when we get together we like to talk over old times in an ancient Borealan dialect. That's the fine, don't mind me. Honorable Bay, Itre, and Upidste. You have to admit, it's an attractive combination. And that's it for segment three. Okay, we'll call that a vote for my early 70s, which are barely two decades away even as we speak. Book your ticket now and avoid the rush. Well, I hope you like Lord Julius as much as I do, because here he comes again in segment four. This is a sequence from Jaca's story. Jaca is Lord Julius's niece, and that's a fact of much greater importance to her poet neighbor Oscar, based on 19th century poet and writer Oscar Wilde, than it is to either Jaca or her husband, Rick. The story needed a little comedy relief, so I thought I'd have Lord Julius just wander by as Oscar is painting one of the demon heads that has detached itself from the sheer rock face of the upper city of Yest, which is completely and inexplicably composed of demon heads and skulls. Lord Julius is equally inexplicably wearing a dress, which just adds to the surrealistic tone. Robert Morley, to me, did the best portrayal of Oscar Wilde in the 1960 movie, so I just went with his voice for this one. Psst. Psst. Hey, fat boy. Got a light? I can't say that I recognize you, but your manner is quite familiar. Is that so? I'll bet you say that to all the girls. Might I make so bold as to inquire after the identity of the individual to whom I am lowering myself? Can you keep a secret? I'm a gentleman. Of course I can't keep a secret. Well, that's good enough for me. You probably guessed already, but, well, I'm Jaca's sweet old Aunt Victoria. Aunt Victoria? Ah, so she has mentioned me. Nonsense. You are quite plainly of the masculine persuasion. You must mean, my good man, that you're Jaca's... Good heavens. You're... Please, no names. The hills themselves have ears. And all this time, I just thought it was a colorful expression. Your magnificence, grand lord of the most noble city-state, of Pal New, Viceroy of Parmok, King of Nadika. Save your breath, pork chop. We scrapped all that. Scrapped, your grace? The real estate checklist and who I can beat at Domino's. We don't use that one anymore. Ew! I had no idea. Might I inquire as to the current protocol for an unofficial... Hold up your index finger. Other one. Attaboy. Now stick it in your mouth and get it nice and wet. That's the ticket. Now stick the finger in your left ear, wiggle it up and down, and say, wet willy, wet willy. Wet willy, wet willy. Louder. I want a big black wet willy. I want a big... Ha ha. Your magnificence is too cunning. Probably just something that's going around. About that light? Oh, yes, of course. Bit chilly out here. Yes, yes, it is. That's fine, thanks. Well, I have to be running along now. But before you go, Your Magnificence, permit me to give you one of my cards. In case I need my house painted? No. In case I need some heavy lifting done? No. In case I'm having a big party with lots of free food and liquor, half the nobility in Astacian, sumptuous flower arrangements, and a bunch of 19-year-old grooms and valets frolicking on the carefully manicured lawns? Oh. Or in case I need someone to move into one of the larger suites and just keep an eye on things for a few months? Oh, yes. I'll give this to my girl, and she'll let you know the minute something opens up. Thank you, Your Magnificence. Don't mention it. Thank you. Thank you.
That's the end of that.
Thank you. Okay, maybe I'll just do that one three times a night in a matinee on Saturday. Segment 5, Elrod the Albino was one of my more popular characters. More Elrod? Yeah? For now? Okay. A parody of Michael Moorcock's Elric wedded to the Warner Brothers cartoon character Foghorn Leghorn, himself a parody of the Senator Claghorn character from the old Fred Allen radio program. There are very few good Foghorn Leghorn cartoons, but the good ones are among Warner Brothers' best. He's a blabbermouth, pure and simple, and in one of the cartoons, somebody finally tells him to shut up. Okay, I'll shut up. Somebody tells me to shut up, and I shut up. Some folks just have to keep jawing, but not me. See, my pappy raised me right. He'd tell me to shut up, and I'd shut up. One time I darn near starved to death. Wouldn't tell him I was hungry. I love that line. Wouldn't tell him I was hungry. When I met Michael J. Straczynski at TorontoCon late last month, he told me that he used to have an Elrod panel taped to his office door for years. The panel from Elrod's debut appearance in issue 4, where he says to Cerebus, mind your manners, son. I've got a tall, pointy hat. Status boy. You can argue with me, but you can't argue with status. He said it found it to be a helpful reminder when dealing with television network executives and people at the various Hollywood studios. Anyway, my decision to incorporate Elrod into the parody of Sandman and his archetypal family, the Endless, Despair, Dream, Destiny, Delirium, and the rest that I did in the Women volume, where the Roach became Swoon and Elrod became his sister Snuff, a parody of Sandman's sister Death, definitely cracked up Neil Gaiman, which was intended to do. As he faxed me after reading it, Oh God, no one should ever laugh that long and that loud
sitting in a room by himself. I now know what Chris Claremont meant when he said, "I'm really not bothered by parodies anymore. I've been done by Dave Sid." Doing Neil Gaiman's voice is something of a vice for me. And it has become something of a running gag between us. That on those occasions when he phones me, he'll say, "Well, it's nice to hear your voice again." And I'll reply, "And it's very nice to hear your voice again as well." And that was the voice I had in mind for the romantically mordant and pathologically self-absorbed Swoon. It has all changed now. The upper city will be invaded by the lower, not the other way around. We will need no weapons now. Your time is done, my sister, and mine has just begun. You played a key role. You bring honor to our family.
Well, I say, whoa there, son. I'm the last ruler of a dying race. I don't have any family.
Nonsense, my sister. Think back. Remember, we have many names in many realities. We are the Clueless. When the multiverse was born, we were mere infants. Little Swoony, little Snuffy, little Sleazy, little Sulky, little Spacey, little...
Whoa, I say whoa again, son. I don't like to rain on anybody's hallucinations. Delusions, that is. But you must have noticed that we all are the only ones here. We're a duet, son. Two-part harmony. You see what I'm saying? Where's the boys in the band? Where's the rest of the Swoon Country family singers? Chorus, that is.
In this reality, we are comedy relief. The plot is complicated. A large supporting cast would be unwieldy.
You're diddling yourself under there again, aren't you, son?
It comforts me.
That's it for the second.
With that reaction, I shall have to see if there's an opening in the Legion of Substitute Neils for someone to take his place in his National Public Radio interview.
Segment number 6. Bloody Eddie Campbell. We are known to each other, respectively, as Bloody Eddie Campbell and Bloody Dave Sid. Bloody Eddie Campbell is best known as the illustrator of Alan Moore's From Hell. And he is also the creator of Bacchus, at least in the God of Wine's most noteworthy comic book incarnation. And the brilliant but thinly veiled autobiographical Alex stories. Well, I reckoned I might just mix the both of them up in the guy's volume. Alec and Bacchus. Only in my telling of the tale, having no insight where Bloody Eddie Campbell stood on the notion of gender interchangeability, I asked myself the immortal Chris Claremont question, is there any reason the God of Wine couldn't be a woman? I even dragged Eddie's wife Anne and his wee bairn Callum, who presently looms over his father, from what I understand, into the story. For the sake of clarity, I'll mention that one of Eddie's Alex stories referenced that one of his wee daughter's endearing means of asking for a drink of milk was to sit in front of the fridge and say, "Bah-bah monk." Bah-bah meaning bottle, and monk meaning milk. She would, as the Scots say, brook no denial, and would not be fobbed off upon some other libation or celery, as can be seen here. Leading to Mr. Campbell's generalized moral to the tale, go out and get your baba. Words I try to live by to this day.
I wish I did a better Eddie Campbell impression, but it would require, I believe, being born in Scotland and then living for many, many years in Australia. And it's too late for that now, as far as I am concerned. I might have known. Alec, what about our agreement then, eh? Agreement? Don't come the innocent with me. You were supposed to mind the kids while Anne and me were on holidays. Oh, that agreement. Aye, that agreement. And here I find you, swilling fermented beverages, smoking like a bloody great chimney, keeping company with the dregs of human society. No offence there, mate. I'm sure you have your good points as well.
Huh? Oh, no offence taken. Quite all right.
As for you, you great lummox, taking a two-year-old to a floating crap game and then losing him trying to go double or nothing on Snake Eyes. Snake Eyes, mate. You're lucky I haven't crippled you. I might yet. And poor old Anne, trying to explain to wee Callum that no, Jimmy Donuts isn't your new daddy. And no, he didn't win you fair and square. And no, Callum cannot have a wee scotch with his tea. Bah, bah, scotch. Bah, bah, scotch all the live long day. I expect we're proud of ourselves. No. You'll have to speak up. I cannot hear you. No. No, I expect we are. And take off that silly hat. Now, you're coming home with me, and I want you to think about how you're going to explain to wee Callum that wee Callum's grandmum would rather dress up as a man and hang about in strange taverns drinking and smoking and carrying on than mind her own grandchildren. Do you ken what I'm telling you?
Aye.
Right then. Now that we've done Errol and the Macquarie family's dirty linen in public for the general amusement of all and sundry, we'll be off home. What are you two staring at?
I'm sorry, Alec.
There. It's all right. Jimmy Donuts took good care of him. And that's it for today. Segment 7, Marty Feldman, probably best known for his work on a number of Mel Brooks films, Silent Movie, Young Frankenstein. The Marty character in Guys is based on a self-publisher who will be nameless, who proved to be a pathological liar, which I found irritating because I was trying to build some credibility for self-publishers, and obviously this wasn't helping. He was a fellow who would tell you with a straight face that he was going to have 3 full pages written about him in next week's Time magazine. So I decided to make Marty like that. He was always the third largest this, or the second greatest that, in Estacion. In this sequence, he's a drunk Marty Feldman, which was even more fun. There's even an appearance by Bloody Eddie Campbell, Richard George, the bartender, my Ringo Starr parody, and the perpetrator, in this case, Cerebus's longtime friend, Bear. The premise of the joke, and this is a true-to-life story, by the way, a friend of mine during my bar-hopping days, who owned his own bar for a while, Stan of Stan and Lil's, actually pulled this one on me years ago. There's a wooden cabinet rigged with chicken wire and shredded newspaper and small water and dinner bowls, so that it looks like a small animal's house with a little cage area attached to it. Inside the cabinet, which has a hinged top, there's a white fur piece attached to a spring-loaded arm which has been compressed inside the cabinet with the hinged top held in place by a small metal clasp. If you are the patsy, in this case me, you are asked if you have ever seen a mongoose by the perpetrator. in this case, stand. And as soon as you are close enough and looking for the mongoose to come out of the little wooden house into the area covered by chicken wire, the perpetrator flips open the metal flask, the top flies open, and the white fur piece on its spring-loaded arm comes hurtling up towards your face like a bat out of hell.
What did you say? That
it
has
a mongoose. You should see it. Ale, please.
That's what I thought you said. You mean an agile, grizzled ferret-like mammal which feeds on snakes and rodents?
Aye.
Sleep help?
Aye.
Tapering to a thick, pointy tail?
Aye.
Razor-sharp little teeth?
Aye. Ever seen one?
Seen one? It might interest you to know that at one time I was the third largest importer of mongoose in Estacion.
No.
It's true. You could look it up. What's it? He's feeding it.
Feeding it? Shit. Cerebus doesn't know. Let's go ask him.
You can't just feed them any old thing, you know.
You can't.
Goodness no. Their digestive tracts are delicately balanced.
Shh. We aren't supposed to have animals in here.
Quite right. Mom's the one.
Shit, he's hiding.
Well, what do you call sleeping? Oh, I'd imagine he's sleeping at this time of day. They're nocturnal creatures, you know. Do all of their honey at night. Of course, being in captivity will change them somewhat. But nocturnality, that's bread in the bone, bread in the very marrow, as my dad would say. A mongoose could no more change its nature than BUNG!
Aye. Here's your problem right here, gents. His toes have broken clear through the floorboards and hooked themselves underneath. Why do these things always happen on my shift? You'll have to get someone, not me, mind you, to crawl under the pub and disengage them. And if Snatcher comes in the meantime, what am I supposed to tell her, eh?
We could put a what-do-you-call bushel basket over him, and you could tell her he's a what-do-you-call floor lamp.
Aye, that would work. And that's taken 7. Now, as the saying goes, I told you that story so I could tell you this one. Segment 8. This is the follow-up a couple of pages later, where Marty, in good, typical guy fashion, having been cruelly terrified to within an inch of his life, now wants nothing more than to pull the same joke on someone else. But of course, he isn't much of a guy, so he has no concept of the premise of the gag, how to play it straight. For starters, he picks the whole rig up and takes it to the patsy, which completely undermines the whole idea of the mongoose sleeping in the cabinet area, which is central to the plausibility. And of course, his next biggest mistake is that he chooses Keith Richards of the Rolling Stones to be his patsy. And it goes like this.
Mr. Keith?
What?
Have you ever seen a mongoose?
Goose I have.
You have?
Yeah. Flying east for the winter.
onk, onk, onking all the way, they was.
No, no, no. Not a goose. A mongoose. A lean, vicious, wiry creature used in many tropical lands to control poisonous snake populations. It is capable of leaping great distances with blinding speed. And they have tiny, razor-sharp teeth. I saw one disembowel a fox once.
You've got a strange sense of humor, mate.
I've got a mongoose in this box here. Would you like to see it?
Not particularly.
Okay. Tongue. Whip, 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 whip.
Right. Now, which end of them has got all these tiny, razor-sharp teeth you was talking about? Aye?
Look, I've apologized for taking something of yours without asking permission. It won't happen. It won't happen again, I can assure you. And speaking as the second most accomplished carpenter in Estophian, I should be delighted to rebuild your device from scratch. All that having been said, if it's not too much trouble, might I persuade one or both of you to give me a hand here? Oh, yes, very droll. Yes, that's very funny. Ha, ha, ha.
That's it.
Segment 9, my parody of Todd McFarlane. Todd Farlane McSpawn. Cerebus has dressed up as Spore, the king of all demons, in an attempt to break Todd Farlane McSpawn's stranglehold on the loyalties of all the masculinists, for want of a better term, who have just massacred the Serenists, maternal extremists, who in turn have had a stranglehold on Astarsian for decades by this point. So there's this huge pile of dead maternal extremists. Always a great jumping off point for comedy. Only to Cerebus' surprise, instead of a heavily armed band of potential revolutionaries, he discovers that they've all put their guns aside to take care of their babies, which their wives have brought to them for the exact purpose of distracting them from their own counter-revolution. Todd's baby daughter, Cyan, who I call Magenta here, and who I met when she was maybe 2 years old, is now a teenager. As you may or may not be aware, Todd McFarlane is an unmerciful tease. He loves to give a pull on your chain and see what you'll do. So here I thought I'd give a little yank on his own fatherhood chain. I never heard a word from him about the entire Todd and Spore sequence.
So you are the king of all demons I've been hearing so much about. I'm Todd Farlane McSpawn. Pleased to meet your acquaintance, and likewise, I'm sure. I don't know if and the boys here have had an opportunity to fill you in on our current situation. We have unanimously voted to make Servius the absolute ruler over the sanctuary and the seat of truth, mostly on account of his magnanimous offer to have you do all of our fighting for us.
Plibs.
That's right, plibs. Which, when we was on the crust of absolute and total victory over the Serenus only yesterday, was the furthest thing from our masculine minds. But, in the second which, when the Serenus, all of a sudden-like, took off their habits or whatever you call them crazy hoods they wear, and blend it in with the indigenous poisonels, thus making positive identification severely problematical. For those of us inclined to shooting foist and saving the Inquisition for later, we could suddenly see as having a certain not theretofore readily perceived valedictory, particularly seeing as how, much to many of our surprises, many of us had awoke this morning with many of our throats cut, present company extruded. To wit, as I said this morning to my longtime associate, Barry Fitzgerald,
you,
this looketh like unto a job for the king of all demons.
You,
a trust in youth chokes you up, O spore, I can tell. Do not be ashamed of your tears, O hellspawn, for we barges of your bosoms have wept also, when all of our wives brought unto us our little ones, our beautiful baby boys and our beautiful baby girls, like my own beautiful little magenta, splash, my own beautiful little the sportsy boys you want to hold the baby.
Clonk, 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 clonk.
Okay, but be very, very careful to keep plenty of firm support behind with too much enters with two head.
Magenta! Aim for a big pile of dead ladies! They will cushion your fall! Do you hear, Daddy Magenta? Aim for the big pile of dead ladies!
Get rid of the baby. No, 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 no. Give the babies back to their mothers. Get your guns and be back here before nightfall. Zip, whiz, 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 whiz.
That's the end of that. See, we have a lot of fathers and father sympathizers in the crowd. Except for you. You're a sadist and a baby hater, evidently. It's a pretty small demographic, I'll grant you, but who else is catering to them these days? Celebrate diversity, that's what I say. We're almost at the audience participation part of the show, so let's review.
Quack.
See, and I was just about to insult your attention span, and somebody remembered right off there. So, when I point to this side of the room,
quack, quack, quack,
quack,
quack, quack, quack.
Okay, very good. No, 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 no. Prove that you can be outgoing and gregarious. Rise above your inner comic book person. Dare to be great. Give me a quack, quack that can hear all the way to Queen's Park. Then give unto me a quack, quack that shall shake the CN Tower itself. Are you ready? Whole room this time.
Quack!
All right, okay. Now just hang on to that thought for the second last segment here. Segment 10. Cerebus, finally having achieved his long-dreamed-of complete spiritual and political dominion over the virtual entirety of Instarsian, enters his twilight years and his last days, trapped within his own network of draconian rules, has become a virtual prisoner, both within his own bedchamber for security reasons and within his own mind owing to the ravages of senility.
Senility, of course, is only amusing to the sadistic young, which is, I suspect, why the last book was so popular. There's a lot of sadistic young people abroad. In another 30 years, cranky comic book fans wearing adult diapers will be piling their copies up in the town square and will then try to remember what they're supposed to do with all these cigarette lighters and cans of lighter fluid. Anyway, the security is so strict that the only way Cerebus can even get his son allowed in to see him for a visit is if he can persuade the permanent member sanctuary of Epperfelde de Rick and Joanne Lesbian to lift their veto of the visit. Necessity is both the mother of invention and a fine bromide for senility as the old scheming Cerebus comes back for one last kick at the can. And then he said the only way the Le Sanctuaire would consider lifting its veto was if he himself was allowed to be Le Petit Chaperon Rouge at your meeting with your son. Compris? That I must be in the room with them.
Okay, lose the accent or Cerebus will throw up.
I must be in the room with them at all times to ensure that the father does not perform the, how you say, seduction upon the son. Le tampon effrayant, the scary tampon, must never give birth to la mère plus nouveau, the new improved mother.
Why not?
It seems, sir, that one of the beliefs of Le Sanctuaire...
Wait a minute, wait a minute. Whatever this belief is it going to make Cerebus want to puke?
Actually, sir, yes, I'm pretty sure it would, sir. I should probably mention as well, sir, that the... Sorf Gap representative overheard my discussions with the Upper Feldens and is threatening to change his vote if he isn't allowed to take tissue samples from all of the participants.
Sorf, what?
The Sanctuary of Rick Frontier Geneticist at Panrovi, sir. The Reform Sanctuary, which split off from Sorsap, the Sanctuary of Rick Scientist at Panrovi, when Sorsap declared both Sojap, the Sanctuary of Joanne Astronomer at Palnu, and Sorpath, the Sanctuary of Rick Pediatrician at Panrovi, to be jointly in a state of anathema. A decision which it might be said...
Oh, truly?
Yes, sir?
Shut up a minute.
Yes, sir.
Oh, truly? What, right now, tops the list of useless crap luxuries that all these Nancy Pants sanctuaries are just aching to spend their collection plate money on, but they're afraid to be actually caught owning because they know Cerebus will have them skinned alive and dipped in brine for wasting that kind of money.
Well, sir, you know your guidelines on sanctuary decor budgets, particularly the allowable percentage of sanctuary revenues which can be allocated to decor, are stringent but extremely fair. I feel safe in saying, sir, that all of the sanctuaries are in complete agreement that ministering to the faithful is our first and greatest...
Oh, truly?
Yes, sir.
If Cerebus wants sunshine blown up his ass, Cerebus will say, oh, truly? Please blow some sunshine up Cerebus's ass. If, on the other hand, Cerebus asks you a simple question, then all Cerebus wants, oh, truly, is a simple answer.
Yes, sir. Well... I'd have to say that that would be a real toss-up, sir, between the fuchsia and incarnadine-veined white marble from the westernmost escarpment of the Buenarotti Quarry in the Coda Mountains and Boreal and Highland Deep Mine Platinum Basso Relievo with yellow-gold filigree and mother-of-pearl intaglio inlays.
Boreal and Highland Deep Mine Platinum Basso Relievo with yellow-gold filigree and mother-of-pearl intaglio inlaid, what?
Pretty much Boreal and Highland Deep Mine Platinum Basso Relievo with yellow gold filigree and mother of pearl intaglio inlaid. Anything, sir.
Thank you, oh truly.
You're quite welcome, sir.
Shut up a minute again.
Yes, sir.
Gum, 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 gum. All right. Go and tell that upper Felton Fufu, quietly, that he can redo his entire sanctuary in fuchsia and gabardine-veined white marble, choir stalls, nave, three-decker, nay, make that four-decker boxes of unfinished but marble-covered wood, pews, kneelers, baptistry, baptismal font, vaults, crypt, ladies' room, men's room, stalls, and urinals, floors, ceiling, walls, windows, doghouse, birdhouse, bill-free front doors, back doors, front steps, back steps. He can even slap some on his wise fellows if they'll hold still for it, if he lifts his veto now.
Wow, that should do the trick, sir. Oh, and sir, the kitchen sent up your cheese trays if you're hungry.
Cheese tray? That's right, he has to open the door to give Cerebus the cheese tray.
Sir, I said the kitchen sent up your...
Oh, the cheese tray. Good idea, Overly. Cerebus is starving.
Yes, sir. Well, let me see. It looks like you have a choice, sir, between the hickory-smoked, lightly-aged cheese that gives you heartburn or the stringy white cheese that sticks to your dental work.
Only one chance to get this right. Have to be close enough to block the door so he thinks it's stuck on something, but far enough back so when he gets partway in, Cerebus can hit him hard enough with the door to knock him out. The hickory smoked, please.
Yes, sir. Click, clack, clunk. Whoop. Sorry, sir. The tray seems to be stuck on something.
Nay! Cerebus has got it!
Well, bon appetit, sir. I'll be back as soon as I have an answer from the upper Felda Fufu.
Sam here, O'Flaherty. Right if you get work.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Oh, don't thank you, O'Flaherty. Thank Cerebus.
Well, I'm tempted to say, and then he died, the end. But I promised you a little audience participation in the last segment, and here we are. One of the things I never got to do, for very obvious reasons, was a tribute to the music of those great old Warner Brothers cartoons and the other cartoons of the 30s and 40s. I don't think their influence can be underestimated. Carl Stalling and all the musicians under his direction who gave it their all for more than a decade, providing irreplaceable punctuation for the animation skills of Tex Avery, Chuck Jones, Friz Freleng, and the others. Years ago, I remember talking to Terry Moore and Larry Martyr about an ad that was pretty common on television at that time, when the theme album was first becoming a big fad. You know, 20 of the top movie themes of all time, 50 of your favorite rock and roll classics, 75 of the world's most important surfer songs. And one of those ads was for 25 of the world's most beloved classical pieces, which, as it turned out, five of them were just close personal friends. They weren't actually beloved at all.
And of course, they got the most officious and pompous and bombastic narrator host with the most world's most seriously phony English accent to announce snippets from each. And he would say, the first movement from Puccini's second imbroglio in D minor. And I had no idea what he meant. I didn't know Puccini's second imbroglio in D minor from a hole in the ground. But then I'd hear it and I'd go, all right, I know that one. And what I figured out pretty quickly as he would go through the list, Liszt's first cappuccino in Demitasse major, Schubert's Glockenspiel waltz Ein Führer, Wagner's Flight of the Ford Coppolas. The problem was he was just calling them by their wrong names. The world's truly most beloved classical pieces
would be, for example, two horses and a duck building a house really quickly. Dun 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 dun. Alligators dancing with hippopotami in tutus. Two kitties hitting each other on the head with sledgehammers. Dun 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 da dun da dun da dun da dun dun. A fat opera singer whose head is shrinking for a reason that I forget just now. Figaro, Figaro,
Figaro, Figaro, Figaro, Figaro, Figaro, Figaro.
Bugs Bunny giving Elmer Fudd a scalp massage. I forget how that one goes. You remember that one? Na 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 na. And everyone's favorite audience participation classical music piece, the little duckling catching up with his duck family at the end of the cartoon. Da 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 da.
Quack quack.
Da 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 dum 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 dum
quack quack.
Da 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 dum da da dum da 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 dum
quack quack.
Thank you, thank you. We're going straight to the signing part after this.
I wanted to say thank you, Dave. Because there have been several changes in the weather over the last few hours, it's nice and sunny now outside, which was where we were originally going to have Dave signing. All of his books, for the purpose of that signing, have been moved over to the Hacienda Lounge, which is at the corner of Bathurst and Bloor. If you see the Pizza Pizza there, it's two doors north. It's a second floor walk up. There is no admission to that part of the festival, so you can walk on up if you want to. And if perhaps you need an escort.
Yeah, well, I think we're all going to walk over together, right?
Sean here from Ages is going to tell the folks what's coming up next, and so some of them will be staying, some of them will be following.
Peter Bergamo, who's been working like a Trojan.
Hi, I'm Sean Smith from Pages, Books and Magazines down on Queen Street, and we've got a This Is Not a Reading Series event coming up here in a few minutes. We just have to set up some equipment. We've got some CDs on sale here, and they do barn